Okay, this is the Wolf of Weed Street. I'm here with CEO of Oxus, Tony Cataldo. Tony, how you doing?
Hey, fine, thanks.
So I've been getting a lot of questions about Oxus, you know, from my followers, from the Twitter sphere, from iHub, from basically all over the place. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to, you know, one, introduce yourself and introduce Oxus and some of the things that you're doing as a biotech company that are very interesting. So whenever you're ready, I'll just start with some of these questions.
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
Okay. So number one, for the layman, how do nutraceuticals differ from pharmaceuticals with regards to going to market and generating revenue? It's my understanding.
Yeah, there's. Go on.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's my understanding that nutraceuticals are an easier process when it comes to FDA regulation. Can you give us a quick breakdown for those just discovering Oxus?
Yeah, no problem. It's not just the discovery of Oxus, but it's probably something that you guys at MarijuanaStocks.com and Wolf of Wheat Street kind of face all the time, and that is for people to try to understand what is the market, right? Where does everything fit? And if you looked at the whole cannabis, marijuana, peripheral market, if you looked at it like a pyramid, at the bottom of the pyramid, you know, you would have the basic growers, right? They grow cannabis, they grow marijuana, different varieties. And then that level up from there is the, you know, now those products and that you need to try to put these into, and those products come in the form of, you know, and that breaks down into a couple of different parts where it's recreational versus medical marijuana, and there's a whole lot of regulatory issues surrounding all of that, the state-by-state models. Some states are approved, some states are trying to get approved, some states aren't approved. And then you go up from there, there's all the ancillary products in the pyramid, right, which is, you know, the different paraphernalia that comes with it, the types of delivery, you know, vaporizers and delivery vehicles, oils, et cetera, et cetera. And then it still always breaks down into what categories are they are. In California, it's only medical marijuana. In Colorado, it's, you know, recreational and medical. And then you're going up again on the pyramid to the companies now that are in the public company sector, which is what, you know, you guys are kind of looking at, and where do they fit in to the publicly traded companies? What are the regulatory issues? There's always an overlay of regulatory issues throughout this whole pyramid, this whole medical and marijuana cannabis world in general. And at the top of the pyramid is biotech, right? That's the reason why I kind of, you know, I don't like to assume people understand that world, because I think we're all just starting to really kind of learn and differentiate that. And so within that framework, it goes back to your initial question about nutraceuticals versus pharmaceuticals, right? The nutraceuticals can be pills, and it can be, you know, categorized. The vaporizers can be categorized with the oils as a nutraceutical. And, you know, hemp oil fits in there as well. And those things are, you know, there is some FDA overview on it, but there's really not a very difficult market to get into. Again, you have to apply yourself whatever the state you're in and the state laws applicable to that. And I kind of look at this whole industry as almost like what happened with the liquor industry during Prohibition and how it metamorphosized. And, you know, even today, liquor industry is kind of a state-by-state model, even though now alcohol is legal. And then you have cannabis. So let's go back. So the nutraceuticals are out there. They require, you know, two kind of regulatory issues. The FDA does look at them, and there's certain criteria that you have to fit into. But you don't have to go through any exhaustive and highly expensive FDA clinical applications, because these are more claims that if you take, you know, this certain type of pill or vitamin with a, you know, with cannabis, and you'll get X, Y, and Z. When you get into the pharmaceutical side of it and the nutraceutical side of it, a lot of dynamics change, in my opinion, to the better. as far as, and let's take the regulatory side. In the regulatory side, you don't have any regulatory issues with biotech assets in the cannabinoid or cannabis world. There's already working very high value, market cap value companies. And when I looked at that industry, I wanted to be playing where they were. Two that come to mind is GW Pharma out of London, England, and INSYS, INSYS Therapeutics. Both $1.5 billion market cap companies that are in the biotech side of the world, not the nutraceutical side. And the biotech side focuses itself on, you know, a number of different things from, you know, pain management, using cannabinoids or cannabis, and that can break down into two areas where it's the actual plant extract versus the synthesized version, and I'll get into that momentarily because that's important from the FDA perspective. And so you have that part of the world, and then you have it in different indications, which could be, I think, for incest therapeutics, you're looking at brain tumors, glioma, which they're looking at. For GW Pharma, it's multiple sclerosis and some other applications that they're applying. Theirs is more plant extract. Incest therapeutics is more synthetic, using more of the synthetic versions. That becomes important to the FDA, like I said, which I'll define. So you've got, I like that dynamic, and then you've got Oxus Biotech now, which were the third one. And so I liken GW Pharma and Incest Therapeutics to kind of like 1.0, like their computer software delivery system, right? They are out there. They've established there's real value in there. You've got institutional support that really goes into the part that the public company aspect of what they're doing. And there are no, and the reason why you have institutional support in there, again, is because there's no regulatory issues at all when it comes to the high-tech, biotech side of the marijuana world. And that's important, right? Because there you're dealing with a therapeutic, a pharmaceutical, potential pharmaceutical drug that really focuses itself on a certain indication. A lot of it surrounds itself with different types of cancers, but there's a number of other areas as well. And that's really where our focus is really now towards. When I looked at it, I stepped back and I go, I know this is a long-winded answer for me, but it kind of helps build the base and the knowledge base of what we're all about. When I looked at my last company, which is actually pretty successful, called Lion Biotechnologies, trading symbol is LBIO. I used the same model there that I'm using now to create Oxus. And at that time, cell therapy was kind of, you know, the institutional guys were kind of like, well, we're not so sure cell therapy is going to be a real business. Obviously, now with Lion Biotechnologies, their market cap now is, you know, I took it from, it was almost zero, was like $200,000, to now it's about $280 million. The stock went from 2 cents, now trading at over $9 a share. And I'm founder of that company, and I went to the National Cancer Institute that had Dr. Rosenberg that had a therapy for stage 4 melanoma. It looked really good, but Big Pharma was starting to try to get those assets. I was able to beat a couple of the big pharmaceutical companies and get the NCI to license with us. Everyone's like, how on earth did you do that? And I went, well, I can't out money big boys like Pfizer and, you know, GDK, but they can't out network me. And I really built mine focused and on Dr. Rosenberg's, you know, technology. And the scientists and the researchers want to see their therapy mature and get out to the public because they want to save lives. That's what they want to do. And there's a better chance if you can mature it through a biotech company than being product number 485 of a big pharma company. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I won the day on that. Fast forward now to Oxus, right, is we've just announced last Monday that we licensed from Dr. Zai, who's the dean of the pharmacology school of the University of Pittsburgh, probably one of the world's foremost authorities in cannabinoid assets and patents. And we licensed this product for, it's called T62, which is for multiple myeloma, which is a $21 billion industry right now. There are a couple of existing drugs out there, but the side effects of those drugs are pretty, you know, pretty harmful. They do shrink tumors, and I think it's Onyx is one of them, and there's several other players in there. I believe Johnson & Johnson or Eli Lilly that produces drug, selling billions of dollars a year, but the side effects are very harmful. Then you have, I looked at the data, to me, is really important in a biotech company. Again, the Dr. Zai's data for multiple myeloma showed that there is shrinkage in the tumors, but it also showed a side effect is that instead of decreasing bone density, causing very brittle bones, which myeloma does and the drugs cause, this does a reverse effect. It actually builds bone density. So I felt, well, here's another product that's out there. It's kind of under the radar screen, but there are, you know, a number of players trying to get that technology, and I beat a couple of big pharma companies and out, including I think GW Pharma was also trying to get that therapy that we won the day, and I did it because my track record, having, you know, created Lion Biotech and bringing in, you know, a really high class. Today we just announced Dr. James Mulay, who is runs the melanoma clinic at Moffitt Hospital in Tampa, Florida. Jim's also chairman of the FDA Ober Committee, which evaluates drugs for approval. And, you know, those kind of guys are important. So Dr. Zai saw the kind of team that I had put together before and the one that I'm putting together now. To make a long story short, they went with us. So the difference between nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals is there's a lot of regulatory issues, but only related to the FDA. There are no regulatory issues as far as can you sell that technology? Is there any state-by-state models? None of that. It is already – these patents come from the are funded by the National Institute of Health, the NIH. This is government-sponsored stuff, so there's no roadblocks in your way. And that's why institutions are really looking at – that they get involved with the biotech side. They don't get involved right now with the nutraceutical side. So sorry about the long answer.
No, don't worry about it. You answered a couple of my questions. You know, it was very interesting, you know, I actually sent out a tweet today after that press release that it looked like you were putting the band back together from LBIO. So
yeah, I am. You know, some of the members are, you'll see more of that coming. Some are new. All of them are A-list players. If this was a Hollywood movie, these would be the A-listers. And when I look and I make that comparison, like I said, I like the fact that we're in the same arena as GW Pharma and Incest Therapies. I should probably let you answer your questions, and I'll make this point later if you don't ask me the question, all right?
No, I mean, just you could just knock it out now while it's fresh on the brain.
All right. So if you look at GW Pharma, I like drafting behind the big boys. That's what I did when I formed Lion. Was Dendreon was a $2 billion market cap at the time. They were in cell therapy. We had just come out. They were 1.0. We were 2.0. And because they already had proven that there's high value assets there and that the institutional guys, you know, will support it on the, you know, in Wall Street. So here you have GW Pharma and Incest Therapeutics. GW Pharma has, you know, has been working on a product for multiple sclerosis, and that's, you know, their market cap's done really well. Anybody who's made money from that has already made their money, right? It's, you know, their stock is 70-some-odd dollars a share. I always felt it's easier to take a stock from 2 or 3 cents to $3 than it is to take one from $75 to $750, all right? But, you know, you have to have real things, too. You can't, you know, you can't just be BS. You have to have real assets and real data. So you've got GW Pharma there. You've got Intest, which is interesting also. They're a $1.5 billion-plus company. Also, you know, I think their stock sells for mid-40s, $40 a share, $45 a share, something like that. And what I liked about them is that they're using synthetic cannabinoids as opposed to plant extracts, which is GW Pharma, because from the FDA perspective, that becomes really relevant. But it has also, you've got a technology that they've licensed from Dr. Sean McAllister, which is really interesting. And that'll become more interesting to us later on. I can't talk about certain things yet. We're working on a number of initiatives. But I like that fact that that's a synthetic cannabinoid that was created, and that market cap value is there. And then you got us, right, where we just brought in Dr. Zai's technology. It is synthetic also, and it's a synthesized derivative of cannabis. It becomes a cannabinoid, and there's different cannabinoids, and there's different initiatives going on. So he's got a lot of research in the cannabinoid area of synthetic applications for many different areas. He's well-published. All of the stuff that Oxus does that I did at Lion also is it's all about having well-published data. And so Dr. Zai is also, if you look at his resume, he's won the award for the AAPS last year, and there's a lot of other things going on. And then you have us, right, which I call 2.0. We're sitting at, 2 cents a share, but we, have a high-valued asset. And if you compare to us, forget about what our position is on the pink sheet, which we're going to be graduating to what's known as the OB part of the bulletin board. We made our applications, and we'll see what happens. I fully expect we'll get approved on that, get off the pink sheets, and be a real bulletin board company. And then my goal is to go ahead and ultimately uplist this to NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange, but that's going to take some time and a lot of work. So you've got those companies out there, and if you looked at them from the science perspective, we match up with those guys as far as our technology offering, as good as them, and sometimes probably better. And then the doctors that are associated with us are higher profile doctors and clinicians and research and scientists than both of those companies have. They have a good group of folks. So what's the difference is we're a company that just went through, restructuring, and we're, a bulletin board company. And we have to get folks' attention and show that we're for real and that we can get through all the things that you have to do. The other thing I'll say, and then we'll get back to your questions, is that on the biotech side, you really have one customer, and that's the FDA, that you really have to pay attention to. You make those guys happy, everybody else is happy in all different sectors of interest. So, next question.
All right. Yeah, I agree with the FDA, which is great, with regards to today's press release. Okay, so with everything that's going on, you touched on uplisting. Now, you guys had been cleaning up the filings in the last couple of months, I've seen. So basically, you answered that question. And it's not like you guys weren't doing anything in that process. I'm sure, I know you can't probably speak about it, but I'm sure the company was working properly, in that period while you were cleaning everything up, correct?
Yeah, I think it's already been done. You see press releases from Oxus. Well, my practice has always been, I don't announce letters of intent because, it's just a letter of intent. Doesn't mean you have anything yet. I only announce things that had actually happened. And that's the way you talk about things too. I found out when I would turn around companies or starting companies that you got to set the right expectations, and the best way to do it is just to say things that have already happened as opposed to what we hope to happen. Of course, we all have a story as CEOs. We're all going to tell you we're the best thing since sliced bread, and you should do this, this, and this. But the devil is always in the details, and we are completely up to date on all our filings. The company is completely up. These are all audited. Our auditors signed off on this. That's why there was the caveat emptor, the skull and crossbones has been lifted. I came in July. Previous to that, the company hadn't done its filings in well over 2 years. And people go, wow. And I get a lot of questions like, why didn't you just put these assets in a new public shell or do an IPO? actually liked Oxus. I felt, you know, I had some familiarity with it because I was brought in years ago to turn Oxus around, which I did, and brought the market cap value up and liquidity and all that stuff. And then I went off. I left Oxus to form what became Lion Biotech. That's why I left. But what I like about Oxus is it's been a public company for 30 years in the biotech sector. It's never been a shell. It has over 20,000 investors. It's traded on two exchanges, the Euronext on the Paris Exchange, traded under OXI.PA, and, of course, the over-the-counter here at Oxus OXIS. So 28,000 shareholders are meaningful. More importantly, the paid-in capital, the actual paid-in capital for Oxus over many years, 30 years of a trading company, that stock at one time was $80 a share. When you go through all these audits, there's something called tax loss carryforwards, and if you're still in the same business sector that you've been, you're able to use those tax losses on your balance sheet. So we have over $90 million of tax loss carryforwards because of Oxus. If one fast forwards and we get into, you know, getting our products out there and getting approved drugs, those tax loss forwards become very meaningful if you're running a multi-billion dollar, you know, if you have a multi-billion dollar drug, which these markets that we're in with multiple myeloma, the drug market's $21 billion this year, and by 2018, they estimate over $50 billion. That market size will be $50 billion. And we'll be, you know, if we're able to manage and take our therapy, which I fully am confident we are, we'll be a player in there. And that's where those tax loss forwards can, you know, come in really handy. And that's an asset. The institutional stock is actually starting to perform. So they're convertible debentures. They're with intelligent investors, you know, a couple of billionaires as well. And that's all part of the getting the filings up to date, which we've done, and getting the first of several initiatives that we're working on actually completed, which the most recent announcement with multiple myeloma and Dr. Zai. And that's what the use of proceeds are for, and, you know, we'll continue to build value and, you know, move forward. So.
Okay, great. Yeah, I guess, you know, I really only have one more question because we've covered everything, you know, and that just goes to, you know, what do you think is, you know, the best way for Oxus to really create shareholder value over, you know, the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, yeah, I think it's leverage and data and biotech, building a strong biotech platform, which we're doing, but being able to articulate that platform and to show how the model, the financial model, fits into that. And so part of our work is already done is the question of, can you take a biotech company from pennies to dollars? Well, you know, I've done that a couple of times now. Lion's the latest example of that. And if you've got real assets coming in with strong patents, and you've got, you know, the right kind of team, what I call the A-list scientist involved, and you've got good management that understands that world and you can raise capital, then you will progress. And that's happening, and I fully expect to do that. We have a high-valued asset already, and there's more stuff to come with this company. So, you know, it's blocking and tackling also. Right now, a lot of folks rely, and we, you know, we're part of it too. We like the fact that there's blogs out there and a lot of news coverage. You know, Sanjay Gupta has certainly done a lot on CNN for changing the perception of what medical marijuana and biotech cannabinoid assets are, and that's happening. So that's good. The bloggers like Wolves of Weed Street and, you know, marijuanastocks.com are also helpful. And the social media that comes with all of that is great, and press releases are great. But I always say it's kind of like that television commercial that was on a while back where, you know, a bunch of people are sitting around a thing. The CEO comes in and hands them all airplane tickets and said, we need you to go out and start talking to people like you did in the old days. You got to have boots on the ground. You got to get out to New York and London and, you know, Chicago, Atlanta, et cetera, and start articulating your story and get in front of people, not just rely upon social media and the electronic medium, but, you know, also just get in front of the funds and the institutions and the brokerage houses and tell your story, you know. Well, you know, like I said, I've seen, you know, a lot of CEOs will sit there and tell you, well, the stock will take care of itself as long as we build the right business model. Well, you know, no, that's not necessarily. You have to. People have to know what you're doing, and you got to get out there and be available to people. And, you know, let them give them the information for them to make the intelligent decisions as to what value you have or you don't have. So I'll be on a lot of airplanes over the next several years.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And so, you know, from what I take from that is that, you know, there is, institutional interest in Oxus, you know, and I'm sure there would be, you know, based off of, you know, the previous track record that you have. You know, it's always important. You know, a lot of people are just kind of fresh, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and not many people have a real track record. So this is definitely good to see. And, you know, this is why, you know, I wanted to have this call. So really thank you for your time. And, you know, if I have any further questions, you know, I hope you'll be available to take them.
Yeah, of course I am. And track records, we're kind of like the NFL CEOs. We're like the coaches, right? If you've been there and you've had some experience, you know, you have a better chance of getting to the Super Bowl and winning. Like Bill Belichick, that's a good example. So, you know, that's what our world is. You know, you gather a following, you gather more expertise, and you go from there. So thanks for all the questions. Happy that I could share the time with you guys. And, you know,
well, thank you.
On your radar screen.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you.
Bye, Tony.